unite her. This woman has an agenda I can't rightly guess. And I fear that the presence of space marines on Tychonis, should word get out, would tip a heavy percentage of marginals over to the rebel cause. Their image cannot be separated from that of the God Emperor. They must be kept at the tower, away from the eyes of the people. Coldwave clacked his teeth in agreement with his subordinate.
Wise counsel, Major, said the Aun. For now then, I release you to return to your duties. You have much to do before returning south.
My gratitude, Uniter. There is never enough time. I go to serve. Raheen bowed once to each of the Tau, and left to attend to other duties. The two aliens watched him go.
He has witnessed the procedures firsthand? Asked the Aun.
He has.
How did he react?
As I did. But he sees the need. He knows the shadow of the Yaheh will fall over this world eventually, probably within his own lifetime.
Such a burden I have placed upon you. In due course, it will be shifted to the Aun Tau Resha. But we cannot present to the High Council too early. If the woman is right, if her project bears the fruit she promises, there will be much darker business to follow. Raukna will be needed from all across the Empire. At that point, and that point only, we can make our work here known. Until then, we must trust that we do what is in the best interests of all.
I believe, Uniter, I see no other choice. If the woman is right, we will be called saviors. If she is wrong, then we are wrong, and history will call us monsters.
The Aun nodded solemnly, then gestured for Coldwave to sit. As always, Coldwave would not do so until the ethereal seated himself. Aun Zee lowered himself gracefully into the chair at the head of the table. A young water-cast acolyte appeared from the left almost at once, bringing fresh goblets, a tall jug and a plate of berries, carefully aged and garnished with a selection of cultivated moulds. The smells made Coldwave's mouth water. He waited for Aun Zee to ask him to pour, as was proper. After each had sipped from their goblets, Aun Zee said,
"The price of the woman's aid still puzzles me greatly. She must have a very powerful reason to request complete freedom of movement within Tau space.
She has asked for access to data regarding territory our people lost to the Yeheh. I have not granted it, but we might learn more by giving her access and observing her searches. Whatever she is looking for must be incredibly important to the Imperium. She would never have brought the project to us otherwise."
"Give her access and watch her," said Aun Zee.
Coldwave bowed. The woman could be stopped later, if need be.
"We must conclude matters at the tower soon," said the Aun. "The emptying of the city prisons has been well noted now. Questions are being asked, and the Raukna are not a limitless resource. However selfish and misaligned they may be, they are still kin by blood."
"As you say, Uniter, but if any must pay the price, let it be those who have rejected the greater good, who would kill or steal from their own brothers and sisters for gain, not loyal fire warriors ready to lay down their lives by noble choice. Enough of us have died fighting the Yaheh, while the Raukna served their own interests."
Aun Zee made a gesture, palms together, long fingers intertwined. An old salute to the fire caste who had died for their people and those that were yet to die in the times ahead.
As you say, let the Raukna serve the Tau Va with their deaths, since they will not serve it with their lives. Our loyal fire warriors must be saved. We lose too many, and the number grows each year. But we may still pity the Raukna. I believe their all-consuming self-interest is a kind of illness, not a choice.
Cold Wave processed that, searching his feelings for a moment.
Pity is not hard to come by as I watch them processed in the laboratory. The infection procedure. Uniter, I am thankful you need not see it yourself. That we drugged them first is little consolation. Even in an altered state, they know true horror when they look into its savage, hungry eyes.
The Aun raised his face to the sky and said, We did not, either of us, ask for this. Fate brought us to this day. Fate decreed that this onerous task should fall to us, and us alone. But we are equal to it. We will do what must be done. Give the woman all she asks for, but continue to monitor her every breath. The Earth Caste must glean all they can from her while she still believes she can manipulate us. When the moment comes that we no longer need her, we will decide then whether she is to live or die. Until then, make no move against her.
Cold Wave dipped his chin.
My life for the Tau Va. I will not falter.
When will you return south?
I meet with Chasel Cayenne before dusk to discuss new security operations. Once I am satisfied with her proposals, I will set out again for the south.
She does a fine job in your absence. You trained her well. I will repeal the emergency powers of the security forces in 3 days. We cannot allow the widening of the divide that has opened between our people and the Gwela. Only in unity does true strength flourish. The Gwela have such great potential as a people, but there is so much they must unlearn first. Truly, of all the integrated peoples, they are the most difficult, and yet could offer so much to the Tau Va. The universe does seem to revel in such dichotomies.
The Aun made a low, trilling sound in the back of his throat, mild laughter. It was a warm, rich sound, and the scent molecules he exuded were just as pleasant. Cold Wave found himself soothed. It was true. The humans were a tangled mess of contradictions and complexes, and yet there was something compelling about them. The two races had so much to offer each other. If only the human race as a whole would put aside their ignorant, reactionary ways and their terrible, suicidal lust for conflict. If they could only see with fresh eyes, the fruits of cooperation could be ripe and sweet.
Aun Zi continued, I have ordered an end to the curfews. A sense of normalcy must return to the capital. We must show faith in the majority. Measured against our temperance, the acts of the rebels will appear all the more extreme and more repulsive for that.
There are still several significant insurgent cells active in the city,
Cold Wave cautioned,
not counting those we have so far been able to monitor. The arms shipments we uncovered recently hint at the likelihood of many more. It is this very district I fear for most. If they do strike again, it will likely be at our structures of governance, and at you, above all. Their failure in hitting military targets.
And here Cold Wave was speaking of the rocket attack on his own transport.
Will have convinced them to shift their focus. Were I in their place, it is what I would do. and they may yet have weapons of more potency, which they have been saving for just such an assault.
Aunzi steepled his long, blue-gray fingers and gazed at the bright, polished surface of the stone table.
The insurgents in the cities are of lesser concern to me right now than the enclaves in the drowned lands. The Speaker of the Sands is no fool. The presence of the woman and her bodyguard on this world will not slip his notice for long. He may even know already. The timing of the attack on your transport was not a coincidence, I wager. Discontent is like a cancer. Untreated, it will grow. Whatever it takes to remove it, that is what we must do. A sign of trust, a show of temperance. It is the only way.
The sun was on its way west now. The shadows in the garden had begun to lengthen as the day shifted into mid-afternoon.
I have monopolized your time over long.
The Aun gestured at the berries before them.
But enjoy these with me, and let us speak of less burdensome things for a while before you go.
So they did. As always, Coldwave felt tremendous peace and honor in those moments. Dark thoughts of his current duties fell away for a time. All too soon, however, his visit with the Aun was up. The hour of his briefings with his sub-commanders in the city drew near. At Aunzi's request, Coldwave escorted the ethereal through the gardens to the chambers of contemplation. At the arched entrance, they stopped.
You bear such a terrible weight on all our behalf, old friend. Would that I could take more of it upon myself. The fire cast, as ever, is the rock of our people, and the best hope for our future. Go with my gratitude now.
Coldwave made a gesture of regretful farewell.
For the greater good, Uniter.
The greater good, Hunter. May your contributions be many and great, and remembered with honor forever after.
Chapter 13. Karras was tense on the shuttle over from the Alest. As grueling as they had been, the purity tests were behind him. The watch had cleared him for a return to duty, though how hotly contested that decision had been, he would never know. He stood in full armor, helm set atop a nearby ammunition crate, and silently went through several of the stabilizing mantras he knew. None seemed to work as well as they ought to. He could have spent the journey in a passenger compartment, but he preferred the shuttle's main hold. For one thing, the emptiness of the hold suited his mood. For another, he was in appropriate company here. Across from him, held firmly in place by thick titanium chains, sat the dreadnought, Chiron Amadeus Chirophiles. Immense, wordless, still radiating all that sorrow and rage. Karras knew the Lamenter's story. He felt for him, perhaps more so now than ever before, having seen his own chapter undone in the Eldar Witch's damnable mind manipulations. But visions were just visions. Lies were just lies. Chiron's chapter had suffered genuine obliteration. The great devourer had crashed down on the Lamenters like a tsunami. No chapter could have stood against such a storm. Tragic. Legend said the chapter had been cursed from the start, part of the infamous 21st founding. Now there was no chapter. Chiron believed himself the last of his kind. Karras scowled. He wished there was something he could do for this battle brother. The dreadnought's sorrow and survivor guilt only ever dimmed when he was lost in combat, giving himself over utterly to battle flow, his pain submerging till the peace of victory called it forth again. In time he might face a worthy foe and sell his life dear. It was his greatest hope, but so far none had equaled him. Was the mighty warrior staring back at Karras as the death spectre thought these thoughts? The dreadnought had no face to read, no expressions. All he had was angled armor, tank-like, broken by a single diamondite vision block. But for the flickerings of his troubled aura, he was inscrutable when quiet. If he was watching Karras, he could surely read the apprehension, the tension on the Death Spectre's face. Karras didn't bother to hide his mood. The last time he had seen his squad brothers, he had been peering up at them from rubble, with one intact eye, the other pierced with rock, his body crushed under black stone, bones broken, blood flowing. They had, more likely than not, thought him beyond saving. But Sigmar had known. He had known of the Eldar machine. "Were it not for that damnable device, brother," thought Karras, "I might have ended up encased in a chassis like yours." There was great honor in being so interred, more certainly than owing one's life to a demon and a Xenos machine. "How do you do it, brother? How do you keep fighting when all you held dear was erased from the universe? When there is no brotherhood to return to, how do you stay the course? There is so much I could learn from you. Truly, I honor your strength. Your soul may be the strongest of all of us." Karras could hardly conceive of an Imperium without the Death Spectres there to fight for its protection. And yet that was precisely what Hepaximan had threatened. Not just the destruction of the chapter, but its fall from glory, the stripping of its names from the halls and rolls of honor throughout the Imperium. To be disgraced, to be excommunicated, to have all they had accomplished over thousands of years purged from record and memory. Lies. All lies. Torment was the demon's purpose. Torment and manipulation. It had overstated its power, its influence. Karras had to believe that. He had to. He grappled with his thoughts, forcing them to his brothers on Talon Squad, to the four other space marines that awaited him aboard the Saint Navar. Four exceptional warriors with egos to match. To be worthy of leading them again, he needed to stand before them unclouded by doubts. They were apex predators all. They would smell weakness like blood on the air. They needed to see in him a force of certainty and wrath that they could follow once more, not some haunted wretch preoccupied with the lies and illusions of the Imperium's enemies. "I am not that. I am Talon Alpha, and I have work to do." He was about to resume his mantras when the rumbling growl that constituted Chiron's machine-modulated voice interrupted him.
"You are different, and yet the same, Librarian. There are new shadows in your eyes."
"The more we learn," replied Karras, "the more shadows we come to see. I'd not choose ignorance to spare myself difficult knowledge, brother."
"Others might. The truth is seldom comforting. But the Raven Guard named you scholar, and he named you well. Whatever you have learned in your time away has not been to your liking, that much is clear. Remarkable that you live at all. I saw them preserve the mess that was left of you. I did not expect to see you draw breath again. It would have been an honorable death, I say. The foe was worthy. I would have envied you."
"There will be other chances for such envy, I'm sure," said Karras, and he found himself grinning. "I doubt our next deployment will be any easier than the last."
"In Tara's name, I hope not. Let the foe be obscenely strong, and the odds be preposterous. I want to die laughing, drenched in Xenos blood."
A deep, rumbling sound filled the air, laughter as approximated by Chiron's powerful vocalizer grills. As Karras enjoyed the sound, a voice interrupted on the shuttle's comm system. "Docking in 3 minutes." He lifted his helm from the crate on his right and placed it in the crook of his left arm. Chiron's laughter ceased. With abrupt gravity, he said,
"You are Talon Alpha. You lead, we follow. Make sure the others know it, scholar." Whatever Sigmar's demands, lead as you did before. You were strong. You got us through. These fresh troubles you carry, bury them. Show the squad your strength. We are Space Marines. We respect little else.
Karras threw the massive walking tank a grin. Good counsel, old one. As to your glorious death, I'm sorry. Fate has a twisted sense of humor. Like as not, you'll outlive us all. The sound of docking clamps closing on the shuttle's hull echoed through the hold.
Aye, agreed Chiron. That is my curse.
Gravity shifted slightly. A gentle change felt in the pit of the stomach. The shuttle had fully docked now in one of the hangars aboard the Cinque Navar, and the larger ship's grav plates took over. Karras strode over to the dreadnought and unfastened the titanium crash restraints. With a hiss of powerful pistons and a rumble of Promethean engines, the massive warrior rose to full height, towering over Karras, dwarfing him in every dimension.
I hate being trussed up like a grox over a feast fire, rumbled the dreadnought.
Two serfs in black jumpsuits appeared at the inner portal, bowed low, and crossed to the rear of the compartment, there to initiate the process of lowering the shuttle's ramp. Chiron swiveled to watch them, then turned his visor back towards Karras.
I will follow you, Alpha, into battle, into glorious death. Let our enemies dread our wrath. That is the way. These new shadows, the fires of battle will burn them away, even if only for a while. I know. Had I eyes of my own still, you would see those same shadows in them. You have my strength beside you. Lead us well. Make me proud that I still serve. Do that for me.
Karras wrapped a fist off Chiron's front armor. I'll give you Xenos blood by the ocean, if I can, brother. Now let us go meet those other troublesome bastards. They've surely missed us. The ramp descended with the smooth, well-oiled silence one might expect of an Ordo Xenos craft. When it hit the hangar decking, however, there was a resounding clang that echoed off the vast hangar walls. In the relative quiet, it sounded like the ringing of a temple bell. Four black-clad space marines stood a few meters apart, all facing the shuttle's aft hatchway. None quite knew what to expect. They knew Karras and Chiron were returning to them, but in what state? Chiron was already so mechanized that his restoration was a given. But Scholar? Last they'd seen, several large pieces of him had been strung together by little more than shreds of nerve and tendon. When he marched, proud and whole, down the shuttle's ramp, they watched in stunned silence. Here was the Death Spectre at full height, moving as assuredly and confidently as ever, his stride long, his head high, as noble and austere an image of the Adeptus Astartes as any of them might aspire to. Behind him came the great metal behemoth, thundering down the ramp on piston legs as thick as the shuttle's own landing stanchions. Karras and Chiron reached the bottom of the ramp and strode forward, all eyes on them. 4 meters from the line they stopped. Silence and stillness pervaded as the space marines regarded each other. Karras's awareness was heightened, his vision shifted, augmented by his gift to show him the auras of three. One, as ever, had no aura to show. There was turmoil there in the pulsing colors. Doubt, apprehension, things Karras could well understand. But there were flashes of positive color, too, even from the ultramarine. That is unexpected, thought Karras.
Talent Squad, he barked sharply. Deathwatch Brothers!
A grin spread across his porcelain-white features.
It is good to see you.
He clashed his right fist against his breastplate. The response was automatic. Even Solarian saluted back. It was Zeed, always one to disregard protocol at the earliest opportunity, who broke from the line and strode straight up to Karras. He stopped right in front of him, their faces only a meter apart, his all-black eyes peering into Karras's all-red ones with curious intensity, as if he were examining a strange new species. Then a broad smile cracked his face, and he slapped Karras's left pauldron with a gauntleted hand.
"You mad dog, scholar," he said with genuine joy. "Next time you decide to kill something, don't pull half a planet down on top of yourself. I didn't join the Death Watch to dig out your suicidal backside."
He thrust out his hand, and they gripped each other's wrists. Then Zeed moved to Karras's side, throwing a short nod at Maximian Voss. The burly Imperial fist hardly needed any encouragement. He too stepped up to Karras and warmly gripped wrists with him. Karras smiled down at the short, over-muscled Adeptus Astartes. Voss's broad features were as open and honest as ever, skin creasing around the deep scars he bore as he smiled. His brown eyes glinted under a thick, jutting brow.
"Do you remember my last words to you, scholar?" he asked.
"I do," said Karras.
"I was right, and I'm glad to see you back."
Voss hesitated a moment, then added with a curious glance,
"Your recovery is remarkable."
Karras was ready for this. He managed to mask the awkwardness he felt. He fed his battle brother the only answer he could, the one he had settled on during transit.
"The apothecaries at Dameroth are unrivaled. I was as surprised as you are."
He raised his left hand and flexed it in front of his face. "The price of such recovery was the scars I'd earned. But I'll earn many more before this secondment is over. Sigmar will see to that."
"And now you owe him a debt,"
said a low, gravelly voice from behind Voss.
"For he did not abandon you, despite his warnings."
The Imperial fist moved aside, stepping off to join the Raven Guard in greeting Chiron. It was Darian Routh of the Exorcists who had spoken. It was he who stepped forward next. Karras nodded to him and extended his hand.
"Brother."
They stood regarding each other for a long moment. Routh's eyes were as hard as ever, like black diamonds, studying Karras without reserve.
"Those warding tattoos are fresh, Death Spectre."
"They are."
The exorcist examined them with interest. Finally, he said,
"They did good work on you. The grimoires look strong."
Karras nodded, then pointedly looked down at his own hand, still extended. Routh didn't smile, but that was Routh. A smile might have cracked that crag of a face. Nevertheless, he reached out and gripped wrists with Karras, and there was force in the grip. For a moment, the two stood joined in mutual greeting, and there was respect there, though there was also a certain unmistakable frostiness to it.
"He didst return changed," quoted Routh. "And the changes wrought upon him were both hope and sorrow to the people of the steppes, for his strength was multiplied, fed and forged by the losses he had known. But his soul now bore a weight that much greater, and the fire within him burned less bright. And in time those changes worked a fell magic on him, and did seal the fate of his people."
"The Chronicles of Uranos," replied Karras. "By Aldred Derlan."
"Hardly apt, brother. Uranos was a brutal warlord who butchered millions in the name of a false idol." In truth, the choice of quote disturbed Karras, though he grinned as he spoke. Did the exorcist mean to suggest Karras would doom his kill team? Was it meant as some kind of warning? Routh gave the smallest of shrugs and released Karras's wrist.
"It is a quote about a leader's return after sustaining near-fatal wounds. Apt enough in that. I'm sure you are as eager to redeploy as the rest of us."
"No," said Karras, "more so. You at least have been active.
Sigmar provided summaries. I read them in transit. Heavily expurgated, of course, but it's good to know that you have been kept sharp. Routh took that without further response. He went to greet Chiron, leaving only one yet to step forward. "I will not grip wrists with you, scholar," said this last, his voice as haughty and sharp-edged as ever. "We almost failed at Kiara under your so-called leadership." Karras gazed back into grey eyes filled with ice. Before he could answer, Sifa Zeed called out from behind him. "We'd have fared far worse under you, prophet. You couldn't lead a slow march across flat ground. Don't listen to him, scholar. He's the one that missed you most." He and Voss laughed together at that. But the ultramarine blazed as he replied, "You had your words, ghost. Keep your damned peace while I have mine." Zeed snorted and said to Voss, "I could hit him 7 times before he'd know which side I was on, and he'd still guess wrong." Voss chuckled. Karras ignored the jibe at Salarian and stepped forward to stand between him and the others. "Whatever your thoughts on how I handled Night Harvest, brother, I am glad to see you well. I am disappointed that you hold to your resentment of me, but it matters not. Just do your job, or I'll give you cause to resent me a lot more." There was a flicker in Salarian's aura then, something transient, ephemeral, so fleeting that Karras almost didn't catch it. But he did, and its color was dull orange edged with blue. "So there is a part of him that is glad to see me returned. Would that it were not quite so small." "We do not always get what we want, scholar," said Salarian. "I did not wish you dead, but Sigmar is a fool if he fails to hold you accountable for almost costing us the Kiaro mission."
"I am many things, ultramarine," said a dry, grating voice from over Salarian's shoulder, "but a fool is not one of them."
The members of Talon's squad turned as one. Before them they saw a spider-like mechanical construct, a pillar of sensors, scanners, and vocalizer grills, atop 8 spindly metal legs.
"As if the puppet master would ever reveal himself to his puppets," thought Karras. "He greets me via mechanical proxy. I should have expected as much."
The Inquisitor's proxy scuttled forward, clicking and whirring. When it settled a few meters in front of Karras, the voice continued.
"Welcome back aboard the Saint Nevar, Talon Alpha. You look suitably restored. That is well, because time is against us. I require your presence in the main briefing chamber now."
The spidery construct turned somewhat awkwardly and began to scuttle away, but as it went, it called back to them.
"And you others, be ready for a group briefing as soon as your Alpha and I are done. Do not tarry. It is time once again for the Death Watch to earn its reputation."
Chapter 14. "Why?" asked Karras.
"If you tell me nothing else, tell me that."
The figure on the tall black throne turned its hololithic head to regard him coolly. Since the figure was projection only, Karras's senses could tell him nothing. There was no soul there to read, no aura, no energy, just photons. This was precisely why Sigmar remained above on the 3 Gela-shielded upper decks, off-limits to most on board. It was easy enough to guess that those decks house the Inquisitor Lord's astropathic choir, maybe his psychic coven, and no doubt a veritable army of servitors to take care of more mundane needs. But Karras's mind was blocked from knowing. His astral self could no more penetrate those protective fields than he could sense emotion from this shimmering lie seated above him.
"Why?" echoed the Inquisitor through the vox grills built into his throne. "Because it serves me. I chose you to lead Talon. It serves my needs, and my needs serve those of the Ordo and the Imperium itself. I may come to regret my choice in time, but your success on Chiaro has borne my decision out so far. You extracted White Phoenix from the mines. Others would have failed. It was unfortunate that eliminating the Brood Lord almost cost you your life, but as I said, the odds were against Night Harvest from the start. Projections for the survival of the entire team were incredibly low. And yet
you still opted to gamble with Space Marine lives. The hololithic figure remained unmoved.
The objective warranted the risk. Such gambles are what Adeptus Astartes' lives are for. Or should I deploy you only where victory is assured? You are Ordo assets now. I will wager your lives as I see fit.
You speak so of Space Marines. It's well that you appear only as a hololith. I might teach you the price of your hubris. The projection shook its head.
We both know better. You are no oathbreaker. You would not be a black stain on the shining history of your chapter.
What do you know of our history? Said Karras dismissively.
More than you might suppose, said Sigmar. No archives are as extensive as those of the Inquisition. And while the noble order of Occludus may seek to cloak itself in myth and secrecy, the eyes of the Inquisition can pierce any veil to which they turn, given time and cause. Something to remember, Death Spectre.
Karras forced his temper to cool. He did not like the turn the conversation had taken. Is that a threat?
A reminder of your duty. You and I must operate in extremes, together. I need to know you will continue to execute my orders.
You ask for blind faith. Among the Death Spectres, leadership is conferred for deeds witnessed. I have no such grounds to trust yours.
A circular argument. I am an Inquisitor Lord. That rank alone, independent of all I have done to attain it, is enough.
Karras answered with silence, teeth clenched.
Lyandro Karras, if I held you in low regard, we would not be talking now. You would be dead. Recall that I selected the entire team personally. Nothing I do is on a whim. The war we wage must be fought on my terms. It is of a scale that would shock you, and the alternative to our success is too grave to countenance. Be glad your responsibilities and decisions are limited to the immediate and tactical. Leave the greater burden to me. Simply, be my implement, my knife in the dark, my mailed fist. Do what you are best at, what you are shaped for, and honor your oaths.
Why the Elder Machine? Karras demanded.
Was there no other way?
The face of the figure on the high throne remained impassive, unreadable.
It was not a decision I took lightly. I know all too well the baggage of zealous hate that all Space Marines carry. There is a place for it, but one must know that place. Ultimately, I authorized your interment in the machine because I needed you back at full capability. My coven has unusual difficulties in foreseeing your future. I had to take appropriate measures or risk losing a much-needed asset. The crucible into which I am sending you next will be infinitely more dangerous than the last. We have less intelligence on the ground this time, fewer assets in place, and you will be fighting an enemy with technology that even our greatest tech magi still struggle to counter.
You speak of the Tau as if you respect them. In some quarters you would be hanged for heresy. The hololith grinned.
The Inquisition decides what is and is not heresy. The Tau have their weaknesses, and we will exploit them. But only a fool would refuse to recognize their strengths. I know from your records that you have never faced them. That is unfortunate, for they are unlike other foes. But it is an issue I have arranged to mitigate. You need only know this about them for now. They are an entirely different prospect to the gene stealers you slew during night harvest. This is no ravening horde you face. Raw courage and bloody determination won't win the day this time. Before we go further, I will summon your squad brothers. We will begin the briefing proper once everyone is assembled.
Karras took a step towards the throne and held up one hand.
Wait, he said. I would ask one more thing before you do.
Then ask for all the good it will do you.
What happened to the woman we extracted? What happened to White Phoenix? The hololith gave a dismissive shake of its head. For a second it flickered out of existence, then blinked back into view upon the tall throne, and said simply,
The rest of the kill team has been summoned. They will arrive in a few minutes. I give you those minutes to reflect on the futility of asking such questions.
Assembled again in full armor, the kill team was a sight that lifted Karras' spirits after the talk with the Inquisitor. They were as he was, bred for battle, disdainful of politics and gamesmanship. The straight fight was what Space Marines lived for. Talon Squad may not all see eye to eye, but they had a lot more in common with each other than they did with those around them. And they were good. Karras had watched them file in. Pride in his chapter aside, these were some of the best Space Marines he had ever served with. He had seen them pull Night Harvest from the ashes of disaster. Each was supremely skilled, a specialist complementing the talents of his battle brothers. Together they were far more than the sum of their parts. Salarian still radiated bitterness and hate. Routh was still cold, unreadable and aloof. And Zeed was still an irreverent troublemaker. But what had needed to be said had been said. Downtime was always less welcome than war. The hololith had shifted form again on Sigmar's whim. Karras no longer cared. Let the Inquisitor labor his point about need to know as he liked. It was the mission ahead that mattered. He would focus on that. Let all else fall away. As it should be. It was the figure of a wizened old man in a ragged monk's habit that now sat atop the tall black throne looking down at them.
The Saint Navarre, began the hololith, is currently heading towards Galactic East on its way to rendezvous with the vessel that will take you to your destination. Between now and your deployment to the planetary surface, you will interface with the ship's archives and update your knowledge of Tau language, specifically the dialect most used by enemy forces there.
Spoken Tau cannot be accurately recreated by unmodified human vocal cords, said Karras. In the event that we need to interrogate one of them in their own language,
accounted for, replied Sigmar.
He did not elaborate. Instead, he said,
Your insertion will be covert. Once you have adequate intelligence and it becomes necessary to make a move, you will strike hard and fast. You are deploying to a hostile world. While it is not heavily garrisoned, once your presence is known, the chances of success become borderline non-existent. The window will close fast. Get in quietly. Establish contact with loyalist forces on the ground. Ascertain the location of the target. Secure and employ any necessary local support. Acquire the target and get out.
And what of me? Chiron rumbled. Am I again to wait like a guard dog at some damned exfil point like a witless gun servitor? Is my strength to be squandered yet again? I was born to wreak havoc. Throw me into the storm, or let me sleep. My patience with these special operations of yours, Inquisitor, wears perilously thin.
The Inquisitor's hollow turned its head towards the mighty dreadnought.
When and where heavy force is needed, Lamenter, your qualities will be called up. Ours is not a compact in which I'm required to satisfy your sense of pride or hunger for bloodshed. In this case, there are too many variables to say how you will best be utilized. Decisions will be taken on the ground. It is highly likely that the asset you are to extract will be heavily guarded. Intense combat is likely, losses almost a certainty. My coven has seen as much. Still, if the mission goes to plan, you'll not alert entrenched security forces to your presence until absolutely necessary.
What of the security forces? Asked Voss. What are we looking at?
I'll come to that, Talon IV. The planet to which you will be deploying was once an imperial world. We call it Tychonis. The Tau call it by another name. It was separated from the Imperium when a warp storm called the Dragon's Eye flared up, blanketing the region in an impenetrable cloud called the Green Veil. Shipping and psychic communications were completely blocked. When the storm spent itself and the Green Veil retreated, the planetary populace found itself under yearly attacks from the Dark Eldar. These lasted until Tau forces touched down on the planet and eliminated the Dark Eldar presence, freeing the people from their suffering, at which point most of the human population turned its back on the Imperium and embraced the philosophy and culture of the Tau. So it is today. Ordo assets on the ground report that the Tau have managed to turn vast swathes of what was once desert into highly productive and rich agricultural land. Long-range scans and astropathic reconnaissance bear this out. Atmospheric processing has turned the northern and southern polar regions into areas of extreme precipitation. Extensive canals channel this water to the rest of the planet, allowing for widespread agriculture and habitation, improving the lives of all but the rebel tribes who refuse to integrate. The security forces present are a mix of Tau and human military. There are a few elements from other species the Tau have co-opted, mostly Kroot, but no auxiliary force of significant note.
The people of this world, growled Solarian. They abandoned the Emperor's light. It is unforgivable.
But not in the least surprising, said Sigmar. Your own ultramarine brothers and the Tau fire caste have fought side by side in the past. You know they are unlike other races. Their regime is not a difficult buy-in for a world on the fringes, unaided in a time of great need.
We cooperated out of dire necessity, snapped Solarian. The Ultramarines are as contemptuous of Xenos as any chapter, and any chapter with an ounce of strategic sense would have committed to that accord in the moment.
No one suggests otherwise. Malbede was, as you say, dire necessity, and it is dire necessity that moves the Ordo's hand now. A highly trusted Inquisitor Lord, designated Epsilon, is on Tychonis. All contact has been lost, imprisoned most likely. But we cannot be sure at this stage. We need her extracted alive. We can risk no direct frontal assault until we are absolutely sure of her location. Even then, it must be a lightning strike like a bolt from a clear sky. Do you understand? This is a precision operation, not a hammer blow. Any open act of war may not only cost us the life of the asset, but will almost certainly eliminate your own chances of survival.
Asset recovery? Snorted Zeed. Another night harvest?
This is nothing like night harvest, replied the Inquisitor dryly. The best chance you have of locating and extracting Epsilon is to make contact with the rebel tribes. The Kashtu of the North are best placed to aid you. They have been resisting since the Tau first set foot on their world. They have a network of spies and cells that may be your best hope in gaining vital intelligence, not to mention operational support. They know the situation on Tychonis better than we do. Use them! What do we have on Epsilon's position right now?
Demanded Routh.
The situation is highly fluid, replied Sigmar.
The hololith turned its head towards the exorcist as it spoke.
The Ordo has assets in place among the rebels and in the cities. Not many, but each is working on locating the target.
The rebels, said Karras.
They will mistake our coming for some long-awaited sign, correct? They will believe we are their liberation.
I would wager you are even counting on it.
The hololith grinned, and not pleasantly.
Such assumptions will serve our purpose well. Encourage them. We may need the rebels to launch diversionary assaults. A great many will likely die. Do not let your consciences confuse you. Their rebellion is none of our concern. It is doomed in any case. The world in question is currently of too little real worth to the Imperium to warrant a Militarum recovery expedition. Focus only on Epsilon. Time is of the essence. We don't know how long we have before the Tau find a way to pry highly classified information from her. It may already be too late. In any case, she must be recovered alive so she can be fully debriefed. She is an asset of the very highest level. The implications of a successful interrogation at the hands of enemy forces.
And yet your precious Ordo lost her to the Blueskins? Said Zeed with a shake of his head.
Should have had her on a tighter leash.
Resources, said Voss, quickly diffusing his squad brother's remark. What are we going in with?
Sigmar ignored Zeed's remark and focused on answering Voss.
Pre-deployment loadouts will be decided, and on-site resources will be overseen by your operational commander. I can tell you that you will have Reaper Wing for transport and air support, Chiron for heavy ground. You will also be deploying with a special operations task force, Inquisition Stormtroopers, all of whom read and understand the Tau language fluently.
Wait, said Karras, holding up a hand.
Operational commander? You mean to say that you will not be overseeing this one yourself?
The Saint Navarre shall remain fully stealthed on the periphery of the Tau defense grid. She will not risk entry until the critical moment. Mission command has been assigned to another, one especially suited to the task. You will follow her orders to the letter, as your oaths to the Watch and the Ordo decree. I emphasize, Talon Squad, that her authority over Operation Shadowbreaker is absolute.
Her authority? Said Salarian.
Sigmar's hololith winked out of existence for a brief instant. When it returned, it was followed by a hiss of hydraulics and plasteel on plasteel as the heavy door on the room's starboard side slid up into the ceiling. A slender female entered the briefing room through wisps of oily steam. She was lithe, almost panther-like in her movements. The Space Marines watched her with mixed expressions as she marched crisply to a position a few meters in front of the base of Sigmar's throne. There, she turned and cast an assessing eye over them. Dark hair cut high at the back, longer at the front, framed a caramel-skinned face in which sat two almond-shaped eyes. A dark, ragged scar ran from forehead to right cheek. She did not smile, nor did she bow. She gave no sign of awe or reverence whatsoever. Instead, she half turned and spoke over her shoulder to Sigmar.
They are glorious, my lord. Let's hope they are as lethal as they look, because they'll need to be.
Salarian looked ready to leap forward and strike her. Karras put out a hand and forestalled him.
"Mind yourself, woman," he said. "You address space marines."
She turned back to them, her eyes settling on Karras. In answer, she flashed him a bright and supremely confident smile. It transformed her face, one that made her beautiful, where before she had seemed as rough and rugged as unprocessed ore.
"Talon Squad," said Sigmar. "Meet Archangel, your operational commander for the duration of Shadowbreaker. Until this operation concludes, whether in victory or death, her word is law."
Chapter 15. Salarian surged forward. Karras threw a restraining hand against his breastplate, but the ultramarine knocked it away.
"First you assign me to the tactical command of a damned 13th founding psyker," he raged. "And now..."
"Control yourself," growled Karras.
"Prophet has a point, scholar," said Zeed. He addressed Archangel.
"How many decades have you seen, woman? 3?
"Hold yourselves, both of you,"
Karras snapped. He faced Sigmar's throne and the shimmering figure atop it.
"The Inquisitor is about to explain." "My decree is reason enough," said Sigmar flatly.
He turned his head towards Zeed.
"But in this case, Raven Guard, I will indulge you. So listen well. There is no individual better qualified to lead this operation than Archangel. Even among all the Death Watch assets at my disposal, no other. As to why, she shall speak for herself."
The woman's eyes fixed boldly onto each of them in turn, until she was sure she had all their attention. She showed no fear whatsoever, as if daring them to challenge her. Adeptus Astartes were used to humans being overwhelmed or paralyzed with fear in their presence. Not so this woman. Karras observed her aura. It danced and coruscated like that of Kashka Redthorn, the bold captain of the Saint Navar. Both women radiated that air of supreme confidence and competence that inspired others to follow, even hardened fighting men. Among the people of the Imperium, there were the lions and the sheep. Most people needed strong leaders. They craved them. They craved the freedom from personal responsibility that comes with putting faith in something or someone bigger and bolder than oneself. The vast majority were sheep. So it had always been. Captain Redthorn, at least, showed genuine deference in the presence of the Adeptus Astartes. But this woman, this soldier, lithe and taut, tattooed on neck, forearms and shoulders, with the iconography of Militarum Special Forces, showed no deference. In fact, she expected it. She radiated killer instinct. This, Karras could see, was not just some Ordo agent. This was a veteran of wars fought and won. A genuine killer, a specialist every bit as dedicated to her purpose as each of the assembled Death Watch operators. She did not cower before them, because she was a lion in a room full of lions. And if she was to be worthy of leading them, she had no choice but to show it here and now. If even a small crack appeared in her resolve, Talon Squad would not take her seriously. Karras felt a sudden empathy for her, a kinship even.
"Leadership is an honor and a burden both. Show us then, woman, that you are the lion we will need you to be."
"In the field, you will address me as Archangel," she said. "But my birth name is Varanetza Althus Copley, Var for short, Copley to those that prefer it. I don't much care what you call me during downtime, so long as you get the damned job done. Operational success is everything. If necessary, I will give my life and the lives of all those under my command to achieve it. I may not be a space marine, but I've dedicated my life to waging war for mankind. You will find me uncompromising, but you will also find me open to good counsel. Even grateful for it."
she continued to eye them. None of the kill team interrupted as she continued.
I have fought beside Space Marines before. I know the truth behind the legends. I have read your files. I respect what you are and what you can do. I may not have your physical strength, your inhuman resilience, your centuries of war, but I have proven myself worthy to lead this operation, to lead you until its end. Read my records for yourselves if you doubt it.
She cast a half glance at the hololith presiding over all of this.
Those parts of the records for which you have clearance, that is.
The briefing chamber was silent. Still, she held their gaze, never looking away.
The name, said Voss, breaking that silence. Copley. Is that Elysian?
Always the peacemaker, thought Karras. Voss often found a way to cut through the tension and move things forward. His uses went far beyond raw strength and technical expertise.
She doesn't have the look of one, muttered Zeed.
Elysians were typically lighter-skinned and slightly heavier in build than the woman that stood before them.
The name is Elysian, but only half of my genes are. My father was a sergeant in the 41st Elysian Troop Drops Regiment, the Thunder Falcons. My mother was a refugee from Armageddon. I spent 6 years in the Guard. For the last two of those, I was head of a special interdiction force that ran assaults on Tau supply lines. After that, I was selected from the Departamento Munitorum Special Operations Detachment F. We ran long-range reconnaissance patrols deep into Tau-held territory. I can read, write, and understand 16 Tau dialects, and with a modulator can speak them too. After that...
Enough, said Sigmar. The rest they can read in the files.
He addressed Talon Squad.
Archangel has been heading an Ordo Xenos task force, specializing in operations in Tau space for the last 11 years. For the duration of Shadowbreaker, Talon will be attached to that task.